Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 45, section 5, which is old single column, page 514. Right at the bottom there, 514. All right, it's pretty pretty apparent what we're about to do next. We've worked through those introductory sections, as we mentioned, that give us little bullet point overviews, and now they're going to give us a little bit about the permanent residents at the local system level. The material sons and daughters. So they play a very big role in everything that goes on there. And since the beginning of our ascension through the universe of universes begins there, is going on there, they have a lot to do with that. Material sons and daughters don't just help out mortals when they're still very much material and on their initial spheres, they greatly assist the beginning progress of those mortals on the at the local system level in their local universe. Okay, so let's just get into it here, and you'll see when we get into the second section here about them that it gets very relevant to us.
Section 5, the Material Sons. The great divisions of celestial life have their headquarters and immense preserves on Gerasim, including the various orders of divine sons, high spirits, super angels, angels, and midway creatures. The central abode of this wonderful sector is the chief temple of the Material Sons.
Okay, so we'll in the next paper we'll be dealing with the details of what they're referencing there, these residential spaces. You can see, there's all of these residences. There are all sorts of beings revealed and unrevealed, but at the center of the whole complex is the Material Sons and Daughters. I mean, that... see, the point is not to tell you about the residences here. That's the next paper. But, they're giving you this so that you can appreciate the very first thing they want to tell you. At the center of it all, is the Material Sons and Daughters. So that should tell you a great deal right there, how significant they are to the whole local system domain. They're given, the place of honor, if you will, at the center of all the residential areas. Now notice, the curious term. This the central abode of this wonderful sector is the chief temple of the Material Sons. Okay, why did they use the word temple? I mean, they don't literally mean there's a worshiping place. They mean their whole residential domain. They're calling a temple.
Is that what the Michael Memorial is?
Well, it's just, the whole point is that it's not about anything you initially would be thinking when you see the word temple. Don't think any sort of a sacred place in that religious sense. The reason that they're saying temple is they're very much, they have a very definitive outer life function. The Material Sons and Daughters are out and about, including going to worlds as Adam and Eve's, helping out those worlds. There's this inner space. They're trying to get you to recognize that when we say inner life, outer life, we mean very much, by inner life, that's just what's literally in our conscious domain of mind. And then the outer life is how we're relating to the external world. And that, the core of that inner life domain is the quote-unquote temple within. Okay, they're trying to, use this in an analogy that you have this inner sanctum space when they're not out, you know, working in the trenches. But, you know, to see them, see their activity in this domain is to see a very direct expression of the true personal nature of their literal inner, you know, mindal life manifest in a community of beings, how they live, how they relate to one another. This is the beginnings of something that if you remember way back when we were reading about the Isle of Paradise, they pointed out that when you get to the Isle of Paradise, you're in a space where you're thinking, okay, I've got this whole different outer life thing I'm going to be doing on the Isle of Paradise. But in many ways, you've transcended the distinction between inner life and outer life. It's when you're on the Isle of Paradise, it's like you're inside of the Temple of Temples. You know, the outer life is the inner life, and things that normally can't be manifest in the outer life are manifest there, like truth. You know, and it's because it isn't really an outer life anymore. It's like you've gone inside. You know, that word paradise is indicating that you aren't just in some sort of outer, external world space, but you're in a different sort of domain. See, they're purposely doing that, saying that right away by the time you get to Gerasim, you'll have the first shades of this phenomenon, where the doings in the outer life will be so well-crafted, so predicated on such definitive personal character that it's almost you can begin to sense what it will be like when you genuinely have gone totally inside when you're on the Isle of Paradise. You know, to go from the universe of universes to the Isle is like to go from the external world to some inside domain. Right? Right, so that's why they did that. I mean, you'll see right away in the next sentence that they go back to sort of a normal mode of talking about it. But the very first thing they wanted to get you to reflect on is, you know, is just how profound an experience it will be to be there. It will almost be like you're inside the mind of some perfect being. You know, and the perfect order that's in that mind, to be amongst their doings, amongst their homes and gardens and whatnot. All right, so see how, you know, the domain. See, they go right, you know, the next thing, they go right back to talking about it in a more of an external world mode. But it's a very delightful external world.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, because of the debacle that occurred here with the fall of the Adamic regime, how far they'd fallen from this to what occurred here.
Right, and just, you know, if you want to, as I'm describing this very delightful place, imagine the chaos that was there during those 2 years of the rebellion on Gerasim. You know, how the sacredness, the temple-likeness of that space would have been so corrupted by, you know, vast numbers of the material sons and daughters joining the rebellion, you know, and corrupting their inner life, and hence corrupting, you know, this inner-like outer life that was, you know, that normally was there. See, and that just adds to, we've referred to that, how difficult it would have been to stand unmoved in the face of the rebellion, because it isn't just some abstract set of ideas that some guy is blabbing, you know, in front of some podium. I mean, your whole environment, you know, is this symphony of falsehood that would be seducing you away from where you should be. So, you know, we'll talk a lot more about the material sons and daughters in a subsequent paper. You know, you may recall there's a paper about the planetary atoms coming up in a little bit. So, you know, we'll get more of the details of them up there. But here, you know, you see what, you know, what's normal. It's you know, they're just about to tell you just how intriguing this place is.
The domain of the atoms is the center of attraction to all new arrivals on Gerasim. It is an enormous area consisting of 1,000 centers. Although each family of material sons and daughters lives on an estate of its own up to the time of the departure of its members for service on the evolutionary worlds of space, or until their embarkation upon the paradise ascension career.
See, so that's a, you know, notice that one of the fascinating things they did there is, you know, they, you have a single family, you know, and they're going to have a residence, obviously, but, you know, did they just say residence? No, they said a state. Okay, so, again, just adding to the grandeur of it, you know, that each family has this, you know, this vast estate, you know, and those estates are collected into 1,000 sort of city-like, you know, centers, organizations, collections of these. You know, it's a vast place. Remember, we're on Gerasim, whose diameter is 100 times the diameter of the Earth. There's no oceans, no wasteland, right? You've got 10,000 times the surface area of this planet. Right? There is lots of room for very vast, you know, estates and domains. Okay. All right. So, you know, it, you know, if you had any, you know, questions about, is there going to be just, you know, is it going to be like in Star Wars or something, and you go to this new planet, and it's just a hubbub of you know, everyone jostling against each other, and so, you know, no, it's going to be very open and very, you know, it's not going to feel cramped at all, even though there's lots and lots of beings. You know, obviously, the more orderly everyone is, the more there can be a lot of beings, and it won't feel chaotic and hence cramped, you know. Everything will flow so smoothly amidst one another. All right, so you can see it's a center of attraction for all new arrivals on Gerasim, and remember, you'll get to be able to take visits to Gerasim while you're going through the mansion worlds, so you don't have to wait until, you know, you're all the way done with the mansion worlds. And then that there's two things that are going to affect, you know, barring rebellion and stuff like that, two things that are going to affect the number of material sons and daughters that you have at the local system, on the local system headquarters worlds. One, has a pair of them gone to, you know, a mortal origin sphere to serve as an Adam and Eve, so then they're not on at the local system headquarters anymore. And remember, they go there for, you know, until the planet's way settled in light and life. So they're there for ages upon ages upon ages. They're just, you know, they're not at the local system headquarters anymore. If these material sons and daughters have been humanized, get an adjuster, and then begin an ascension career. You know, and so they leave the local system headquarters because of that. So those are the two things that are taking population off the local system headquarters. You know, at the same time, of course, they're procreating and giving birth, you know, to new ones. So there's this equilibrium that's going on between those who are being born and those that are heading off to ascension careers or duties on worlds. I'm giving you all this because they're about to give you some specifics on that, and I want you to make sure that you notice they were giving you some prep material for that to properly recognize what they're talking about. All right, so what else do they say here?
These material sons are the highest type of sex-reproducing beings to be found on the training spheres of the evolving universes. And they are really material. Even the planetary Adams and Eves are plainly visible to the mortal races of the inhabited worlds. These material suns are the last and physical link in the chain of personalities extending from divinity and perfection above down to humanity and material existence below. These suns provide the inhabited worlds with a mutually contactable intermediary between the invisible planetary prince and the material creatures of the realms.
Okay. They're trying to close any little loose ends that might be in your mind. The material suns are the highest type of sex reproducing beings. So, there isn't a question of, well, what about beings that are not revealed and stuff? Well, all the unrevealed beings are, not going to be literally material, corporeal sex reproducing beings like these. They're going to be more angelic-like or higher. Okay, so that's an important point, that the kind of immediate material creature, will creature that we understand doesn't go any higher than the local system headquarters world. That's the ceiling on that phenomenon. Or another way to look at it, that's what a local system is fundamentally all about. That's the domain where you have all of the material identity, will creatures. Above that, the constellation level, like we were reading, they said that's not material, that's the definitively Merontial domain, see, so you have this definitively material domain and its ceiling, and then you go up to the more directly Merontial domain. So when you're when we're Merontia creatures down still in the mansion worlds and stuff, we're quite material, still. There's just a few threads of spirit energy, in that Merontia energy system that's our body and stuff. It's still very much matter-like. The literal meaning of the word Merontia, that which is akin to matter. Very much so. When you're down in a domain where the ceiling, in many ways, is still populated by material will creatures, material sons and daughters. Okay. So, you want to keep that definitively in mind so that you can break free from the old notions of when I die, I go to heaven, and it's all very not material anymore or something. It starts out quite material. Beings that are definitively material can be doing, ceiling-level jobs in that domain still, the material sons and daughters. Okay. It also tells you that matter is a little bit more sophisticated than you initially think. It's good for more than just making mere animals. Matter can make some pretty fancy creatures, like material sons and daughters. Was anyone confused? I mean, sometimes, we don't use words as diversely as we should. Words like even there, when they say even the planetary Adams and Eves are plainly, and you're going, well, wait a minute. I don't understand. But even there, it means just as, that sense of the word even. They're material just as the planetary Adams and Eves are plainly visible. That's the sense of the word even there. Okay, just as. As opposed to, the way we'll use it to emphasize, or those sorts of uses of the word even, just so you're not confused there. Because you're thinking,
if we were transported there today,
yep,
we could actually see them.
Right, yeah,
may not see a whole lot.
And when they talk about them in another place, just to emphasize how, they say, and you could literally mate with them. you got to walk right up to them and do the horizontal hula. They're that literally like us.
So when they come, I'm trying to remember this because I know what to say. When they come here,
just to put it,
is their body the same as it was there that they are incarnated in here?
Okay, so yeah, we'll get to that a little bit when we get forward. But the basic thing is no. When they're dematerialized and then rematerialized, the life carriers don't rematerialize them exactly like they were. They downstep them just a little bit. Yeah, and a lot of those details are when you, okay, when they talk about them more, in that subsequent paper. I didn't mean to be crass there, but I just noticing that the revelators try to make that same point. They try to get you like stop thinking in some ethereal plane sort of way about stuff. We're so used to thinking of heaven in some sort of mystical. Misty way. It's like, no, this is like, right, no, literally, they're made so that they can procreate with all of the mortal origin creatures in the local system.
That's not the plan.
Right, and then in that same sentence they say they could, but normally they don't. You need one more downstepping to the Adam and Eve's offspring before the mating actually occurs. But
And when we see them on Gerizim, we won't be mating creatures.
No, we won't be material creatures anymore. So, you couldn't. But if we were to be transported, the way we are now there, wouldn't need any sort of modification of our vision or anything, You could just walk up and shake hands with them.
Just a quick addressing some of my mores.
This could take a while.
John, don't be cruel. Okay, highest type of sex-reproducing beings.
Right.
What other beings are sex creatures on the magic worlds other than the material sons and daughters?
There are all kinds of different mortals on inhabited worlds, including Midzoniters, which are a little bit fancier sort of sex creature than we are.
Some of them might not get neutered like we will.
Well, remember, we're not modified as material creatures. We're not material creatures there anymore. We're Marantia creatures, there. Right. They just mean see of all the different material sex creatures. He's like, well, what about Midzoniters? Are Midzoniters higher than material sons and daughters? No. Well, what about some of those, they allude to worlds that are really different than ours, and they don't even talk about what kind of mortals are on those worlds. Is there some of those unrevealed things that might be very, very high sort of? No, there's no material sex creatures that are that are higher in the vertical spectrum of creatures than material sons and daughters. They're the ceiling of the whole thing. And you can mate with them. See, so that just trying to tell you that you don't range very far in vertical nature, no matter where you go to inhabited worlds. It's all pretty much kind of one plane, despite all of the adaptation of radically different atmospheres and what have you, gravities and all these sorts of things that happen on worlds. Especially if you're talking about within a given local system. You can't mate with the mortals in the neighboring local system because their biology is a little bit different. All of the biology in this local system is predicated on the biology of the initial pair of Adam and Eve. The Creator Son makes the initial pair of Adam and Eve for each local system, and then all of the biology, all of the material biology, is predicated on that biology of that pair of Adam and that pair of material sons and daughters. The original pair.
Well, you did send us shutters through the webinar.
Well, yes. So, Chris, just a question about this embarkation upon the Paradise Ascension career.
Mm-hmm.
What form are they in at that point? And when does that happen?
Right, so I use that term like we did last week. They're quote-unquote humanized. In other words, they're decoupled from some of the additional energy that they're related to besides the material, so that they're very much like we are. That allows an adjuster to come, and have that mind. They live out a life and they don't really explain if they actually go through a death process. Or if they just go to fusion, on the local system headquarters world. Yeah, but one way or another, they mean they are eventually transitioned from a material body to a Marantxa body is built for them, and their soul is put in as the brain of that. You know, so it's just like us, you know, and work through an ascension career as a Marantxa creature, eventually become a first stage spirit, work their way through the super universe, work their way through Havona, get to the Isle of Paradise.
And do they do this after they've served on the evolutionary worlds?
Yeah, I mean, a lot about the details of that is given when they talk about when a world gets settled in light and life. You know, eventually, though, that the Adam and Eve on that world, they are humanized, get an adjuster, begin an ascension career. Yeah.
But there aren't a lot. I mean, there's only 1,000 worlds, you know, and so there's a lot more Adam and Eves than there are. Than 2,000 of them. So there's a lot of them never serve as.
You're right. There's lots and lots of Adam and Eves that, you know, that never serve as Adam's, Adam and Eves.
They still start their ascension career.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Their long-term destiny is the core.
Yeah. And so, you know, there really are us. It's just that they have a very different initial job description. But the fact that, you know, when all is said and done, they're basically just like us, is the fact that they, you know, they eventually come around and merge right into the mortal ascension scheme and go to the core of the finality. Yeah. All right. let's see. So, you know, even the midwayers are, you know, really just us. They just start out with a very different sort of a, you know, an experience, but eventually they merge into that, you know, ascension scheme. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. What else was there? Let's see. Highest type. Yeah. And then also, you know, the other way around. You know, if you, you know, you're calling them sons. You know, so you know, you'll call them material sons and daughters if you're really kind of thinking in the bottom up mode. But if you're thinking of them as the last link in the chain of descending sons of God, okay, that's even more reason to just call them collectively material sons. And like they're saying, you know, that's the bottom rung. Just like with that whole descending hierarchy of angels, you know, there's seraphim, there's cherubim below them, and then there's the unrevealed, you know, lower order of angels, and that's it. That's the bottom rung of that whole hierarchy. Here's the bottom rung of the descending sons. All right. You know, and them serving as Adam and Eve is taking that descending ministry all the way down to the bottom of the trenches. All right, yeah, and
we're even lower.
Right, so yeah, right. Yeah. But we quickly catch up with them, right? I mean, when we're Gerasim citizens, now we're fully at eye level, you know, with the material sons and daughters. And in many ways, of course, you know, you got an adjuster on Gerasim, and they don't. So, you know, in many ways, you're already ahead of them, right? Okay, and just one last little thing. You know, there's like I've been saying, there's lots of places where they give you more about them in different places in the book. But you know, they'll make these little passing references, how you know they can see all the lower spirit, quote unquote, spirit beings, you know, just normally without any assistance. And so you know, they can see the Lenonidex. And so when they're Adam and Eve's, you know, they can see, talk to the Lenonidex that the humans can't see. You know, and then they can relate the messages. So, you know, they also serve like the prince's corporeal staff does, you know, and being able to serve as an intermediary, like they're saying there. All right. So that whole, okay, you know, it's just that little bit, and we can, you know, we made it a lot more than the paragraph by bringing in other parts of the book. But they're just giving you this little thumbnail sketch. Okay, and then they give you this interesting little tidbit that's not anywhere else in the book in this next paragraph.
At the last millennial registration on Salvington, there were of record in Nebadon 161,432,840 material sons and daughters of citizenship status on the local system capitals. The number of material sons varies in the different systems, and their number is being constantly increased by natural reproduction. In the exercise of the reproductive functions, they are not guided wholly by the personal desires of the contacting personalities, but also by the higher governing bodies and advisory councils.
Okay, see how much more less crude they were about referring to what I was referring to, the contacting personalities, quote unquote. A little euphemism there. Okay, so you're reading this and you're going, what? 161 million and some change? That's it? And, you know, and how many local systems are there in a local universe? 10,000. Right, so you're talking about just a little over, you know, if you just averaged it, it's a little over 16,000 a local system. It's like well, that's none. I mean, really? You know, they say, well, it varies from system to system. Yes, but still, you're going, I don't know, this doesn't seem to make sense. Something on the order of 16,000 per each local system? That's it?
So local system has, so 2,000 of them go to planets, let's say. So that leaves you still 14,000 left, right?
They're not counting those.
Oh, they aren't? See
right? You know, I mean, you know, it's all Nebadon. You've got 10 million inhabited worlds when everything is all built out, so you need at least 20 million material sons and daughters for those Adam and Eve. But still, okay, see, you know, for this number to be not that much bigger than that 20 million, right? Okay, so there's lots of places in the book where you come upon a number like this that seems too small. It seems too small because you have a false initial assumption. You've got to figure out what that is. Can you back up your thinking far enough to see your initial assumption? Or are you just stuck on your interpretation and it's confusion and I think this is a mistake, you know, or whatever? Okay. So what do you see there that might get you down a different path?
This is a moment in time.
Yeah. Last moment of millennial registration.
So over time, these beings are cycling through.
Right.
They're not just fixed for all time.
Right. So the first thing is, oh yeah, Chris did dwell upon that statement a couple paragraphs back about how, you know, they are leaving, you know, when all is said and done, 20 million of them leave to become Adam and Eve's, you know, and then there's all the ones that are leaving to become ascending sons. Okay, but still you're thinking, yeah, but it's still not that huge of a number, considering they play a vast role. Okay, so you got to look more closely. Now, another hint that they gave you in there is that you shouldn't be too surprised that it isn't a gigantic, out-of-control number, because they told you in the latter part of the paragraph that their reproduction, you know, procreation is very controlled. Right, I mean, they're only having kids, you know, they have permission to have a kid. So the number of them is being very tightly regulated.
They should do here.
Okay.
Like China.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, when we do population control things, everything you see in the Urantia book about heading towards light and life or anything, you know, there's all kinds of very intense population control, right? But still, it's like, but it's still so tiny a number. Look closely. What does it say? It says, material sons and daughters of citizenship status. Yeah. Right? Did your mind just skip over that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can't skip over anything like that. Or you'll go off into 5 years and thousands of web pages filled with detritus. Okay? You got to notice the details. It is not easy to get up to citizenship status on Gerasim. Okay, their children are, you know, come out of the womb as an innocent little babe, just like our children, you know, with basically an empty cranium.
Does it talk about okay. that later, Chris? Is that what
you're? Later in this paper.
Okay.
But you don't even have to see about what they say about the Adam and Eve paper. I mean, they're of citizenship status on Gerasim. How long does it take you to be a citizen of Gerasim? You've got to work all the way through your mortal life. You've got to work all the way through the first mansion world, all the way through the second mansion world, et cetera, et cetera.
But I wasn't born there.
Right? But those babies are just as limited, except for, you know, they got better genetics, but just as limited in terms of the character of their mind as any of us. Yeah, they've got better genetics, but that doesn't automatically fill their mind with advanced personal character. They're born a blank slate, just like we are. They're not like a lot of the beings that are created creator sons and creator mother spirits, where a lot of education isn't required, you know, or even created by the infinite creators on paradise, where no education is required or something like that, right? I mean, they're a blank slate. They have no personal character at all. They start out as an animal, like we do. They don't, you know, and at roughly age six, they're going to get the seventh adjutant and get encircled in the Holy Spirit. And, right, they start out a helpless babe. They've got the whole process. And even when they're a biologic adult, they've got to go through a parallel amount of education and maturing and enculturation to get to the point where they can pass very rigorous citizenship tests.
And yeah. They don't have adjusters.
And they don't have adjusters to do it.
Yeah.
Right? So this is it's a grueling process. So, that's why that number is so small. There's a core group of leaders amongst the material sons and daughters who have made it all the way to citizenship status. Okay? And then there's all that are working their way towards that. And because they regulate this, see, as some of those children, maturing young adults, whatnot, as they finally get to the point where they pass the citizenship tests, we'll read about them. There's all kinds of people that can give a thumbs down to you, and you got to go through a rigorous examination. If they finally get to that point, you can guess that, coincidentally, there's some that have been let go and are beginning their ascension careers, right? So that number of those core individuals is this relatively small number. Think about what they say about the number of individuals on an inhabited world that can be leaders in any generation. There's never been more than 1%. Right? It's the same thing here. Right? And this is all very regulated. Yeah, so there's a question on the webinar.
David Bush asks, why does it say capitals, plural, if it is referring only to Jerusalem?
It's not. There are a record in Nebadon. Right? Right, so all 10,000 system capitals, I was going to help you to get into that context. When they say the last millennial registration, does that mean 1,000 Urantia years? That means 1,000 local universe standard years. So how many Urantia years is that? Does anyone remember?
Jerusalem
5,000. No, it's not Jerusalem. It's a local universe.
Jerusalem years is the same amount of time almost as Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's roughly the same. Okay. But see, this is for all of Salvington. So this is in local universe standard years. So it's 5,000 of our years. So every 5,000 of our years, they take this little tally. Okay, just give you. I wanted to make sure you had a proper sense of things don't change rapidly. See. They only need to do an update where maybe it's 841 instead of 840 every 5,000 years or something. It's a quite stable number, okay, that you don't only have to check every 5,000 of our years. Okay, so that's the deal. It's the citizenship status is the key. And if you don't, hold on to that, if you don't go off on some tangent, right away, but you stick with it. So you can finally get a definitive recognition of how this works. That it's not like humans have always thought, where I die, I wake up in heaven, and everyone is equal. Because, your imaginings about heaven are predicated purely on an immature spiritual consciousness, where the only word in your lexicon is the word equal.
But they are equal in somebody's eyes.
Yeah, right. Right, but they're not equal in the eyes of the people who do the citizenship test. And you'll find out yourself. It's like, can I just, get passed because I have positive intentions? No. You either...
I can talk to you.
You either get every question on the test perfect, or you go back and work for a few more thousand years on, you know, getting ready for the exam. Okay?
I hate exams.
Right?
What's the hurry?
Right? So, I mean...
That's true.
Exactly.
It's important to...
For the rest of your life.
It's important for the revelation to break all of your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and long-standing prejudices about what heaven is like. Okay? Right. It isn't some magical domain. It's going to take effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress for you to get the first question correct on the test. And then you can do it again. Effort, struggle, conflict.
Sounds right? Like life down here.
All right.
Yeah. Right. That's
going to
be as hard as
down here. Steady job.
But you won't, but you'll have lots of help.
And you get no cheating papers.
Right. You'll have lots of help. You won't have the time tension, right? And you will be, you know, you'll be less animal-like, and so, you know, so you won't have all of the. Well, I'm lazy, and I want to be lazy. You know that, you know, that'll start to get, you know, left behind real quickly. All right, okay. So there's, I'm, you know, every sentence has the potential for something very profound, and especially if it's a sentence that you read it and you go, that doesn't make any sense. I refuse. I reject that sentence. I'm going to reword that sentence. I'm going to, you know, demand that the book gets changed. I'm going to, you know, or I'm going to declare that this is an error. Those are the sentences that you're looking for. The sentence that you read in it and you don't feel any tension, it's because you're not mature enough yet to find the tension in that sentence. So look for the sentences that you do find the tension in. Those are your starting sentences. And if you can break through and alter your initial assumption to get that sentence to make sense, now you've made progress. Right? You've got to take on those challenges.
So why would they do that? It's kind of like a trick question. You know, what would be the, other than, as you mentioned just a second ago, to whet your appetite, so to speak, I mean, to, you know, make you want to have to really think a little
the
bit.
The reason that they do it, I said it in passing, but let me just go back and stress it, because not everyone has taken reawakening philosophy. The reason is that it's fundamentally a philosophic text, and the difference between science and religion, you know, science and religion are of one flavor. The difference of philosophy between those other two is philosophy is fundamentally about the initial assumptions. It's not about the interpretations. It's about the initial assumption. The whole revelation is constructed to try to get you to challenge your initial assumptions, those things that you don't even know you have, those things that have never come out in front of your eyes and been exposed to the light of day and to examination, those things that you just incorporated unconsciously into your thinking from a very young age, from the culture that you're immersed in, those unreflected initial assumptions. Revelation is about altering initial assumptions. Okay? That's why there's conflict. Because we need to be revealed to, because we don't recognize we have initial assumptions that are that all of our thinking is predicated on. And those initial assumptions are false. And you can only conclude what you assume. Therefore, if your initial assumptions are false, all of your conclusions are false. And if you don't care that your conclusions are false, then revelation is of no interest to you. But if you care, you know, if it's like, well, I don't care if they're false, they work. You know, I they're good enough for government work. You know, I can get along with them. Right? You've got to care that the assumptions, that your conclusions are false. Yes, they conform to the false culture you live in, but you want to conform to the true cosmos, not the false culture you live in. You got to want to conform with that which is above you. You want to conform with the cosmos, not conform to your ignorant neighbors. Right? Don't limit yourself to the ignorance of others. Choose, right, to find those initial assumptions that are making it so that you can't properly interpret a sentence in the book, and change that initial assumption. You know, and it'll start small and it'll get bigger. You know, you start out with a few simple things, like just a simple number conundrum like this, and you build. And eventually you'll start to get to, wait a minute, I can't understand this sentence. And you'll finally penetrate down to the initial assumption that's behind why you can't make sense out of that sentence. And your whole life will change before your eyes, right? You'll suddenly discover, it's like, no wonder that whole sector of my life hasn't been going well. I just figured out why. There's this initial assumption that I didn't know I had. And I can change that now, now that I have a hold of it. And now my whole life is going to go differently. That's what you're looking for, right? That's, we keep thinking that if we just rearrange the things we can see, no, I still get the same poor life. Well, let me rearrange them like this. No, I still get the same. It's not the things that you can see. It's the thing that you've never looked at. It's that initial assumption that's the problem.
So, Chris, on that thought, you know, mm-hmm. we just started out with 161 million approximately,
yep.
divided by 10,000 gets to 16,000.
Mm-hmm.
So if at the time of this registry or whatever, they mm-hmm. were approximately 16,000, you know, citizens,
mm-hmm.
as you say.
Right, these actual citizens.
Right. So then, you know, so maybe there's 10 times man more that aren't citizens. It still seems like not a lot of people.
You'll actually see there's a lot more than that. They give you the number of the rough number that joined the rebellion. You go, whoa, that's a number that's completely incompatible with this number. See, that's the sort of thing I'm trying to prepare you for. You keep, you know.
But it's hard to do, if you start from the beginning reading through,
yeah.
and you haven't read ahead like you're talking
right.
about,
right.
you know, it's a little different situation. You don't know, it's like when they talk about 10 million potential inhabited planets, you say, oh, well, that can't be right. It seems like way too many. you know what I'm saying? There's it's hard to to judge that right, right away. You have to, you know, you have to have a little bit more information, I think, to be able to, as you say, have that depth of perception.
Yes, you do.
You know,
that's the other.
Say question everything. You know, what I'm learning is that some things you do and some things you don't, or some things you can say that okay, that seems more logical to me. That's probably real. Versus,
well,
does that mean you have to use your own logic in a lot?
Well, you stumbled upon another key thing
okay.
that I didn't mention about getting a philosophic relationship to something. It means getting a holistic relationship. To something, and you're seeing that in just the way I'm explaining things. The only way to get the correct initial assumption for each sentence in the book is to have the whole book in play for each sentence. It's a fundamentally holistic endeavor that you're struggling towards. That's the challenge. Can you get to the point where you can at least on an initial level? Get a hold of the basics of the whole book so that you have the basics in mind as you attempt to interpret each sentence. Because the key is discover, recognize, interpret, and choose. You've got that sequence. It's easy to discover a sentence. You open the book and you have eyeballs and, okay, I just discovered a sentence that says 161 million, etc. Okay, the thing that people always do is they go from discovery to interpretation. They skip the recognition step. The recognition step is about the initial assumption of the interpretation. See, so if you skip that recognition step and just go straight to interpretation, you can't interpret without an initial assumption. So what initial assumption are you using? You're using the assumptions of your pre-existent worldview, your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and long-standing prejudices.
Which is, they're telling me the truth.
Right.
Or whatever
it is. I mean, in this case, you know, I mean, you can just believe the number, but, you know.
So you go further on and say, oh, that didn't.
It's like, well, that is, but it doesn't feel like it's big enough. You know, if you go beyond just being credulous and believing anything you read, right? You know, if you actually think about it a second, it's like, God, that's a small number.
when they give right? you the number of the amount of ascended mortals that were on
right.
Jerusalem. It seems like, gosh, that's hardly anybody.
Right. See, and again, it's the exact same thing. And it's like, if you think about it properly, you go, oh, that is a reasonable number. You know, the reason that number is relatively small is the same reason this number is relatively small. Those ascending mortal Gerasim citizens are a small number that are in balance with the small number of citizenship status material sons and daughters. They let a little class off of the seventh mansion world onto Gerasim, a class that's not too big for the little number of material sons and daughters to interact with them in a very intimate way. They're there for just a short period of time, those ascending mortals, and then off they go to the constellation, right? You have a huge number of people coming up through the mansion worlds, but they're on each mansion world for a long period of time. You have a small group of people that are on Gerasim for a short period of time. And it streams through. It's a Venturi tube, see, on Gerasim, right? They go through fast because there's a small number, right? So if you just take a snapshot at any given moment like they give you there, you know, it's not going to be billions and billions of people. It's just this small handful. I mean, obviously, some, you know, few thousand material sons and daughters can't handle a billion ascending mortals in intimate relationship. Right. See, it's all kept very small and very intimate because it's just a very high quality short period of time you're there. And then off you go. Okay? That's what they're trying to get you to recognize. See, and if you take an easy rationalization out for these things, you'll never discover the truth of what's actually going on. That there's this brief, precious moment where there's just a small handful of us relatively, and the small handful of material sons and daughters, and we have this marvelous, delightful time together in their temple, like we're in their minds. This sacred little place they have that we can share very intimately. That's what they're trying to get you to discover. And the power of that is that you can discover that. It'll be much more profound if you work through the conflict that you initially experience in reading the book. Break through that. Discover that truth. You know, it's now yours. You feel it intimately. It's meaningful to you. You can't wait to get to Gerasim to experience this profound thing that you never would have known was waiting for you if you just said, well, I think probably someone, you know, just as a typo here, and there's actually supposed to be six more decimal places, you know, or some easy out like that. And I think it's just going to be it's going to be just hordes of people. You know, it'll be like in a train station in a major city, and you know, and I'll just blow through there, and I'll be good riddance to it. I mean, you don't. That's not the truth of Gerasim. That's an error, based upon, you know, a false assumption. They want you to get to this.
Okay. When I first read it, you know, about the fact there was only 100 some odd million ascended mortals at the time of the rebellion, or something. Yeah. I said to myself, gosh, probably most of us don't survive.
Right, see, that's the first thing. That's what everyone always thinks. It's no.
When you first read it.
You know, right, when you first read it.
You say, no, that can't be right.
And why do we so quickly rationalize it that way? The interpretation is, well, it's a small number, so not very many people survive. Who taught you that, the initial assumption that gives you that conclusion?
Christianity.
The long history of Christianity. Right.
Oh, right.
You know, which, unfortunately, is not really New Testament. It's Old Testament, right?
Salvation.
Right, that whole bit about the salvation prior to Pentecost, where, you know, getting an adjuster wasn't automatic. You know, and if you didn't do something pretty profound in this life, you didn't get an adjuster, you didn't have a soul, you didn't survive. Most of the rationalization scheme in religion, so-called religion on this planet, is predicated on an Old Testament assumption, which has a thread of truth in it, that getting an adjuster isn't automatic. So you better do something besides, you know, selfishness in this mortal life. You know, you're not going to get Divinington to send you an adjuster predicated on your abject selfishness. Okay? But guess what? You can be abjectly selfish now, and you get an adjuster by grace. It's a totally different physics now. And so all of these, there's an unchallenged initial assumption that everyone that oozed into everyone's pores, and they're interpreting the revelation based upon that Old Testament made Christian assumption, and it's not valid anymore.
Oh, it's everything. It's not just Christianity.
Right, it's not just Christianity. Right, it's, you know, Everyone is seeking salvation of some sort. No, what does the fifth epical revelation say? If you want to have step one of actually having something that's validly called religion instead of all your so-called religions, which are all fixated on salvation in one flavor or another, step one is to take your salvation for granted. Period. Move on to the next question.
A lot of people do take their salvation for granted until they get too close to Christianity.
Yeah. Right. And those historical initial assumptions ooze into their pores, and the next thing they know, they're fearful and they're clamoring for some magical salvation mode.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but it does say bringing a point. I mean, just that's the kind of an unreflected initial assumptions we're talking about. These things that you've never thought about the fact that you are predicating your thinking on. All those things that you learned unconsciously from childhood. All the false initial assumptions of science. All the false initial assumptions of religion. All the false initial assumptions of human philosophy. You're using all of them. You can't do anything else but. You started out as a blank slate when you were conceived, you know? And even at birth, you're pretty much a blank slate. That blank slate has been written on. It's been taught by what? Historical thought. False initial assumptions, right? You've got to go back and redo those initial assumptions. You have to take a philosophic approach. You got to drop down below applying those assumptions in science and religion. You got to get to the core, a holistic reformation of your worldview, and a philosophic reformation. And it will be very troublesome and tumultuous, you know, because the change in initial assumption is to change every conclusion that you've based it on. And that could mean everything you've thought in your entire life. Like, well, okay, back to step one.
But you had to go through this too.
Right. Right, that's what I'm ruthlessly doing. I've been ruthlessly doing for years now. Because I don't care about any of, I have no cherished thoughts that I refuse to let go of. I don't want to have the thoughts that Chris has always had predicated on a false philosophy that I'm oozing in on this planet. I want to think like the revelators. I want to think in truth. I want to have a better set of initial assumptions. And nothing is sacred. I'm willing to toss out anything. You have to be willing to have that Cartesian doubt like Descartes did, where he said, I'm going to take an eraser to everything I've got, and I'm going to try to build it again. Because he got older and he recognized, these conclusions are absurd. I must have horrendous initial assumptions. So he said, I am going to start everything I've learned at the university he recognized was gibberish. He said, I'm going to try to erase everything and start from scratch. Well, he didn't have the revelation, so he couldn't do it properly. But now we can. You can do that. You can erase everything and start anew. And finally, strike step with the truth.
Because you're so right, you know, when I do this pastoral care ministry and with people who are dying, the number one question out of them is you know, am I going to get into heaven? Is God going to, you know?
Does God love me enough?
Right, yeah.
No, he's a really small guy. And, you know, if your beard isn't cut correctly, forget it. I mean, there's no way he'll let you in.
And it's usually the people that are the most religious, right. That have that fear.
Right. Kind of yeah, but just recognize how many Rancho Book readers are struggling, laboring under the same set of initial assumptions, where they're wondering about, you know, well, you know, does God love me enough? Am I going to iniquity? Or, you know, they're worried about what? It's like, no, take your salvation for granted. Let go of that. Fear not is step one. Right? Take your salvation for granted. Now think about something worth thinking about.
Yeah.
Something important. Something that could act. How are you ever going to help your fellow man if the only thing you can think about is your salvation? You're completely selfish. There's no way you can genuinely love your fellow man if the first thought in your head is your salvation. That is the most selfish thought you can have, which means, you know, you can't get to the love and service of the fourth epical revelation. You know, and you don't have to take my, you know, there's a paragraph in the book that just says this literally, everything I'm saying here, it's all right there in black and white. The word selfishness, you know, etc. It's all right there. Take your salvation for granted, it says. It's all right there. It's the height of selfishness. And they tell you point blank, you cannot love and serve if you even remotely have that thought in your head. If you have any concern about your salvation, you can't do the fourth epical revelation, love and service. It's like, well, if I can't do the fourth epical revelation, I bet I can't do the fifth, can I? No, you can't even get remotely close to the fifth.
Lucky to get the third.
Right. You've got to get that in place. Fear not, period. Next question. All right. Let's see. All right, so meanwhile, back to the nitty-gritty of material sons and daughters who are not wholly guided by the personal desires of the contacting personalities. You know, a euphemism for. And so we've got this core group. See, so that's what they're trying to get you. As you go forward from here, you'll see they're going to predicate everything they say upon this recognition that there's this real solid full citizenship quality core group of material sons and daughters that are overseeing all of the doings on the planet. You know, all their children, you know, and all of us as their children, essentially, as ascending mortals. It's all predicated on the integrity of this little core group of leaders that are cosmic citizens, just like that roughly 1% of cosmic citizens we need on this planet to be leaders. See, to have Gerasim citizenship is to be a definitive cosmic citizen. Right? Someone who has the wisdom, insight, and foresight to lead well. All right.
These material sons and daughters are the permanent inhabitants of Gerasim and its associated worlds. They occupy vast estates on Gerasim and participate liberally in the local management of the capital sphere, administering practically all routine affairs with the assistance of the midwares and the ascenders.
Okay, they even added to it. Yeah, they are, as you suspected, vast estates. Okay, they're the permanent inhabitants. And you see, they participate liberally. I mean, they have because of their integrity, they are given a wide liberty of self-government, right? Just like the idea of the United States. If we're going to have this greater liberty, that means you have to have greater cosmic integrity. Now, you can't choose to be pitiful relative to the cosmos and expect this country to work. Liberty has to go away. All liberty will have to be taken away so that there isn't chaos. There will have to be some sort of a totalitarian imposition, you know, that doesn't allow you ignorant blob of protoplasm to do just what random blobs of protoplasm do. Right? If you want to be free, you've got to choose to be of cosmic quality. Right? You know, it on high, no one is given any liberty unless they have risen to that quality level. You know, once they've passed all of this muster, then they have great liberty of self-government. They are cosmically integrous. And, you know, like they're saying, the midwares and mortals that have gotten up to that level are at eye level, and you can participate. You know, we've been talking about that somehow. You know, you start being involved in legislative activities and whatnot. You're a cosmic citizen. All right.
On Gerasim, these reproducing sons are permitted to experiment with the ideals of self-government after the manner of the Melchizedeks, and they are achieving a very high type of society. The higher orders of sonship reserve the veto functions of the realms, but in nearly every respect, the Gerasim Adamites govern themselves by universal suffrage and representative government. Sometime they hope to be granted virtually complete autonomy.
Right, so remember when we read about the Melchizedeks, you know, back in the paper about the local universe sons, the Melchizedeks are the pattern for self-government in the local universe, you know, of creatures. They're the most naturally, collectively integrous like this, and quickly establish a self-governing culture that everyone below them in the local universe is trying to emulate, trying to rise up to that level. Can we have the law written in our hearts definitively enough like the Melchizedeks so that we will be given the liberty to govern ourselves more? And that government on high, that self-governance on high, is predicated on a couple of very definitive ideals of government. Universal suffrage and representative government. And so when you look to the planet around you, you know, you think about how long it took those to get downstepped and have their first expression on this planet, you know, and how definitive it was when the United States, you know, began to move forward as a fact on this planet, of beginning to have these ideals of government on high manifest on Earth, three branches of government, representative government, you know, we're not a democracy, we're a republic, okay, you know, and if in your very biased spiritual consciousness, can't see the perfection of representative government and are driven ever further away from the concept of a republic towards a pure democracy, are you moving closer to God's way? No, you're moving away. The ideal on high is not a pure democracy. It's representative government. It's a republic, not a pure democracy. That the recognition that the Founding Fathers had of that, you know, they got it, if nothing else, just studying the Athenians, trying to do a pure democracy and recognizing, oh, that doesn't seem to be upheld by the cosmos. That doesn't seem to hold together. You've got it validated here in the Revelation. All right, so all these people see that, you know, are constantly trying to break the representative government thing and get more and more to a pure democracy. That is going against the cosmos. That's the fact that's happening more and more. That's part of the emergency on this planet.
It's right? when people recognize problems and they assume, well, what we need is a more pure democracy.
Yeah.
That's throwing gasoline on
right.
the fire.
Right. That's false. See, the Revelation is here to tell you, no, that's not true. You're on the wrong path. You've got some false assumptions or some confusion in your mind that's leading you to that false conclusion that what you need is a purer democracy. No. You have universal suffrage, but you have representative government.
But a lot of people, it's semantics, because a lot of people believe that a democracy is a republic. In other words, they don't really...
A republic is a form of democracy, but you know, that's why I'm saying a pure democracy. That's why I'm putting the prefix on it. You know, so every time, instead of saying, you know, it's like, don't leave it to the legislature. I think we should have a ballot issue. Right? We have more and more and more ballot issues. Why? Because we've lost the recognition of the truth of representative government. And we're going away from the cosmos. And it's going to collapse civilization.
You don't think it has anything to do with our representatives?
Right, well, being brought up by the
Of course it does. Right, of course it does. Right, right. See, but is the solution for you you being a very poor voter and voting ignorant people into government, is the solution to go away from the truth and try to embrace falsehood? Right. See, that's the thing. You see a problem, you know, and you pick a falsehood for the solution. Right. If you don't know the truth, you know. The problem is not with the poor representatives. I mean, did they usurp the people? Yeah. No.
What about our choices?
The ignorant people voted them in. Right? See, and you learn about suffrage on the higher worlds. Yeah, there's universal suffrage, but if you're a very low-quality mind, your vote only counts for one. If you're a higher-quality mind, your vote counts for two. Higher-quality mind, your vote counts for three.
You can go up to 1,000.
If you go all the way up to being a Gerasim citizen, your vote will count for a lot because you have objective consciousness, definitively.
Integrity.
And that other person doesn't, and their vote shouldn't count as much. They get the vote, but their vote doesn't count as much because they're a very low-quality thinker. They don't have cosmic consciousness. Right? It's like, oh, that sounds so discriminating, you know. And,
it is.
Right, your spiritual consciousness detests that thought. Just like it detests, why are those people, you know, representatives? Why are they more special than me? Aren't we all equal? Aren't we all born equal? No. Not only are we not all born equal, we don't all learn equal either. Some people are better at consciousizing governmental truth than others. And that's true of us, of even beings that have made it all the way to the Isle of Paradise. Some of those ascenders that make it all the way to the Isle of Paradise are better at consciousizing administrative governmental truth, and they become a certain type of, you know, minister in the cosmos. Right? So even getting to paradise doesn't change this fact. And so these sorts of things are always, you know, coursing through between the lines of all of what you're reading. All right. You know, and sometime they hope that they will be integrous enough, that there'll be an age sometime in the future, see, that they'll be integrous enough that they can have virtually complete autonomy, you know, self-rule. Are you patient enough like that? Or what do we want? Autonomy. When do we want it now? Is that what you chant? Do you chant that because you know you're just as high quality as a Gerasim citizen? I mean, think about this. There's some humility that maybe is needed. Okay.
The character of the service of the material sons is largely determined by their ages. While they are not eligible for admission to the Melchizedek University of Salvington, being material and ordinarily limited to certain planets, nevertheless, the Melchizedeks maintain strong faculties of teachers on the headquarters of each system for the instruction of the younger generations of material sons. The educational and spiritual training systems provided for the development of the younger material sons and daughters are the acme of perfection in scope, technique, and practicability.
Okay, so why would the character of the service of the material sons be largely dependent upon merely their age? Do they have Swiss cheese genetics like us? No. They have solid genetics.
Experience.
And so it's just, you know, how much experience do they have?
Yeah.
You know, the more, you know, they don't have, it's like, well, there's no matter, it doesn't matter how much experience I have in this life, I'm never going to be a good musician because I just don't have the genetic potential. All right, we have some serious genetic limitations. Remember what they said about Abel. Abel didn't have, it wasn't an issue of nature. It was an issue of early nurture, you know. And that definitive genetics would have finally been able to manifest if he'd lived longer, right? I mean, he's got that Adamic genetics, you know. They can come to fruition. They just need time. So all of them can make it to Gerasim citizenship. It just is a matter of time, like they're saying, the character of the service. Why is it that that parenthetical, being material and ordinarily limited to certain planets? Remember when we first started talking about the local system, we talked about how, you know, we're on, say, the first mansion world or a mantra being, and, you know, we have to actually be in seraphimed and taken over to another world. And it's like, well, wouldn't it be easier to just have like a shuttlecraft and take us, you know? And, well, I mean, these material sons and daughters, you know, they can't be in seraphimed. You know, unless they dematerialize them and seraphim that dematerialized energy and then rematerialize. But then when they're rematerialized, they're not reproducing anymore. Whoops. Yeah, that would be problematic. Since that's one of the big things that they're about is biologic reproduction. Right. So, you know, so there are actual material craft that are carting material sons and daughters between worlds. But, you know, it's just going to be within the local system worlds. I mean, you know, it's, you know, like they're saying, being materially in being material and ordinarily limited to certain planets. I mean, ordinarily, you're not going to put them on this long, literal journey in a spacecraft, a material spacecraft, you know, way off light, many light years away to some other world. It'd take them a long time to get there, right? So normally, they're very much homebodies. They're just hanging around the local system headquarters worlds where they were born. And, you know, the great adventure is to be dematerialized and hauled off several light years to some inhabited world and rematerialized as an Adam and Eve. And you've never been that far away from home before, right? It's like the hobbits. Wow, this is as far away from the Shire that we've ever been, right, Frodo? Right, that... they're very much like that. They don't journey far from home normally, just because you can't. They, you know, they're material. All right, you got something?
Yeah. Well, you know, and maybe you're going to touch on it because you didn't get there yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Melchizedek's, you know, training them.
Yep.
So, our Adam and Eve that defaulted, you know, they got trained pretty heavily by the Melchizedeks about to, and warned and told, right, hey, so on and so forth. Right. So.
Tons and tons and tons of training. But when all is said and done, they're not that different from us. And they have a deficit that we don't even have as much extremely as them. They have to work in pairs. They are so inadequate by themselves. Right, and that was the Achilles heel, you know, that they started working separately. They were so busy, you know, it's like, you know, you know, it's like the husband and wife that both have a job, you know, and they see each other, you know, for 5 minutes once a week, you know. I mean, that's what Adam and Eve were. They were just, you know, working day and night trying to make up for the rebellion, and, you know, everything was a catastrophe. You know, that's a problem. They can't be working separate like that because they only have half the picture. Neither of them can really, by themselves, can be very holistic, very philosophically minded. They're two halves that are meant to stay, you know, together in order to have the whole picture. So, yeah. They were trained like we can never imagine. But when all is said and done, yeah.
That's the reason I have cable.
Okay. So, let's see. So let's see what else there.
Nobody has cable anymore.
Notice the practicability, you know, about the education there. You know that. It's capable, of being put into effect. It's all about its usefulness, your education there. And let's see, what else? There's one. Notice the educational and spiritual training. It's like, well, what's the difference between educational and spiritual there? There's the spiritual part is cultivating the insight. Like I said, I mean, they're circuited in the Holy Spirit, cultivating that spirit insight to get them more firmly anchored in true initial assumptions, and then all of the education about how to properly work with those initial assumptions, you know, all your deductive reasoning and all the factual details of different disciplines, like Adam and Eve, learning all kinds of deep biologic facts and details, you know, about with the life carriers and that sort of stuff, right? But, you know, that's the twofoldness there. You know, it's just like up in paper 16, section 6, like they tell you, the fundamental foundation of all education is that cultivating the development of your spirit insight, you know, through the three cosmic intuitions. That's the foundation. And then upon that foundation, you build all the factual details and deductive analytical abilities and whatnot. Okay, so that's what they're talking about there. All right, let's get some more here, because there's some really fun stuff here in this next section.
Section 6, Adamic Training of Ascenders. The material sons and daughters, together with their children, present an engaging spectacle which never fails to arouse the curiosity and intrigue the attention of all ascending mortals. They are so similar to your own material sex races that you both find much of common interest to engage your thoughts and occupy your seasons of fraternal contact.
Okay, so I already kind of built that up, seeing how they're expressing how delightful this temple, you know, quote-unquote, area is in this relationship. Never fails to arouse the curiosity and intrigue the intention. Okay, so we've already kind of fleshed that out.
Mortal survivors spend much of their leisure on the system capital observing and studying the life habits and conduct of these superior semi-physical sex creatures. For these citizens of Gerasim are the immediate sponsors and mentors of the mortal survivors from the time they attain citizenship on the headquarters world till they take leave for Adentia.
See right there how they're, what I was saying, if that number of Gerasim citizens, ascending mortals that survived, wasn't compatible with this little number here, see this sentence couldn't be true, what they just said. I mean, there's this intimate, you know, kind of one-on-one mentoring going on. See, and you know, and it's a very profound thing. It's not just a passing thing. So it's got to be a nice, intimate, small number of each. Okay. When they talk more in that subsequent paper about the nature of them, they explain the semi-physical in greater detail. They're saying semi-physical there because even though they have all of our material nature, they have some additional elements to their nature that plug them into, you know, make them connected to other energies, the energies that sustain them immortally, you know, because we don't have that, we aren't connected to that, you know, we don't have that influence in our body that's counteracting the slow disconnect of the life animation from our physical system. You know, they have this additional fundamental energy input that keeps that life animation tightly intimate with their material nature, so there's no decay, you know, with age. And you don't start to become a poster child for the second law of thermodynamics, you know, for entropy, right? That doesn't happen with them.
With their modification coming to this planet, it was the tree of life that they had to utilize to keep this.
Right, and when they're brought here, brought to a world as an Adam and Eve, they're downstepped. They don't have this automatically. You know, they have to have this much more literal, additional plumbing and stuff built into them. You know, and they need the tree of life, you know, to facilitate the linkage between these energies and their body. See, they don't need any of that when they're on the Gerasim. It's all just natural that they're linked into this stuff. Like I said, they talk about that more in subsequent papers. But that's what that's about. I think that's everything there, isn't it? Okay, let's go on here.
On the seven mentioned worlds, ascending mortals are afforded ample opportunities for compensating any and all experiential deprivations suffered on their worlds of origin, whether due to inheritance, environment, or unfortunate premature termination of the career in the flesh. This is in every sense the true, except in the mortal sex life and its attendant adjustments. Thousands of mortals reach the mansion worlds without having benefited particularly from the disciplines derived from fairly average sex relations on their native spheres. The mansion world experience can provide little opportunity for compensating these very personal deprivations. Sex experience in a physical sense is past for these ascenders. But in close association with the material sons and daughters, both individually and as members of their families, these sex-deficient mortals are unable to compensate the social, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual aspects of their deficiency. Thus are all those humans whom circumstances or bad judgment deprived of the benefits of advantageous sex association on the evolutionary worlds, here on the system capitals afforded full opportunity to acquire these essential mortal experiences in close and loving association with the supernal Adamic sex creatures of permanent residence on the system capitals.
Okay, so this is a very important section in the book that gives you these two domains of experience, that there is no alternative way, some circuitous route through a whole bunch of other flavors of experience where you can make up for. There's two modes of experience that can't be made up for in any indirect way. You have to engage them directly. First is this one. You notice there's a large paragraph break after this paragraph. The second one is going to be talked about next. The first one is, like they said, when they say sex experience in the physical sense is past for these ascenders. So we're not talking about the horizontal hula anymore. All right, just to be direct about it. You know, that's what they're trying to get you to recognize. So they're talking about the real part of it, not just the actual part of it. But like they're mentioning, you know, in passing here, you know, the disciplines, etc. List the social, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual aspects of their deficiency. Notice they said very personal deprivation. Okay, personality is spirit pattern. And there has to be something very definitively spiritual, the literal substance, you know, spiritual aspect to this. It's so easy for us to just be on the level of the flesh and thinking about sex relations. And not recognizing that there's so much more going on in super conscious domains about bringing these very dissimilar facts of male and female together as one and getting that super additive consequence. See, it's especially that super additive consequence that might touch upon these very high facts that really start to get above my very animal origin nature that really isn't personal, it's just, you know, has a temperament and, you know, and whatnot. I mean, you need that super additivity to get at something that the personality can finally identify with more definitively, something that's genuinely super animal. And see, this is the key, that most differentials are not great enough. It's only when you take this twofold pattern all the way down to the material level where it gets the most individuated, the most different, where that potential, if you can bridge that vast voltage, that vast differential between those most downstepped twofold expressions, it's the only way to get access to some things in the cosmos. There's no other potentials great enough through which you can actualize some of the things that are essential to your nature. So this is what I'm pointing out. And we talked an awful lot about it. It's like, well, what's it going to be like for males and females, you know, when they're ascenders on the mansion worlds? And you know, I was stressing how, you know, remember, you're Marantia there. You're not as downstepped. You're not material there. We will not be material males and females there. Most of what makes us different as material males and females will be left behind. You won't serve that master anymore. And they just told you that directly here. When they said that, the mansion world experience can provide little opportunity for compensating these very personal deprivations. See, that's what I was telling you last week. I mean, you can spend thousands and thousands of years on all seven mansion worlds And there, that differential that we can experience right now is not there. There aren't male and females like we know males and females on the Imagine Worlds. We're not different like that anymore. Right? That's what they're telling you there. You can't find that differential. You've got to actually get to a material male and female again, a material son and daughter, to see that high voltage again. And to immerse yourself into it and get a hold of the super additive consequence that can only come through that differential. And so, see, that, you know, it's that, you know, very important to think that through. You know, it answers that question we were struggling with last week about, well, what about it says, you know, that I, you know, the difference between men and women is still there on as a finality. Yeah, not the difference between material males and females. That's not even there in the first Imagine World. Not at all. What they're just saying there. You can't get it on any Imagine. It's not there. So, you know, that differential is just not accessible to you anymore there. It's all eventuated and down in the core of your nature. It's there in truth, but it's not manifesting in fact. And beyond this life. So if you didn't get, remember the four indispensables of advancing civilization: true religion, true monogamy, prayer, and God consciousness. True monogamy. True monogamy. That's what they're talking about here. To get, you know, you can't have advancing civilization if you don't have beings taking a hold of the super additive consequence of all the social, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual aspects of bringing a male and female together on a mortal origin sphere. That fact is essential to advancing civilization because it's essential to your whole advancing ascension career. For the same reason. Okay, so that's, you know, that's one of the very key things. You know, that's why the Revelators devote three papers to marriage and family. Right. That is a very foundational part of reality. And if you didn't get the chance, either because, you notice they mentioned inheritance, nature, environment, nurture, or unfortunate premature termination of the career in the flesh, a tree fell on you, you've got to make up for this. You know, it may be the case that you're so genetically deficient, like most of us are, that we can't get a true relationship. You know, this is a consequence of the default. I mean, Adam and Eve made it so that it's going to be hard for us to get very far with this. A lot of us are probably going to have to be making up, you know, with the material sons and daughters when we can actually overcome our genetic limitations here. Not to mention all the environmental issues that fill us with, you know, false initial assumptions about marriage and family. You know, so that we are choosing to not, you know, put ourselves in the proper relationship to get these potentials actualized. Let's see, what else is in there? Let's see here. I think that's most of it. Let's see. Just other than, you know, the other thing that they're stressing in general there. There, you're afforded ample opportunity for compensating for any and all experiential deprivations. You know, and then they repeat it in the sense of this relationship between male and female. You're afforded full opportunity to acquire these essential moral experiences. Remember, that's the reason why you have Imagine Worlds. Because there's no way that you can get full experiences in all the different experiential avenues in this short, you know, fairly random sort of life. You know, if you could get it all here, there wouldn't be Imagine Worlds. That's the only reason there are Imagine Worlds, you know, and the more that mortals get all of that on their initial sphere, the less and less those worlds are used as Imagine Worlds, and eventually they're not, you know, there are no Imagine Worlds. They repurpose them to other things because they're not needed anymore. everything is happening on the initial sphere. I mean, if we are in light and life and all living 500 years, you know, we would have ample opportunity to get all this stuff done, and we basically wouldn't need the mansion worlds. Right? So I'm stressing that because this is another initial assumption that trips people up all the time. There's statements in the book about what you have to do as a mortal, and they try to cram that, an interpretation of that, all into this life. Now, a lot of times, you have to see by the context, it's not talking about just this life. It's talking about this and the first seven mansion worlds. You know, this and the mansion worlds, it's being lumped together as, you know, really the mortal life. I mean, until I fuse with my adjuster, I'm mortal. Doesn't matter if I have a Marantia body. I'm still mortal. Right? Until I fuse with my adjuster. Now, the qualification is, you might be on Gerasim and haven't fused with your adjuster yet, but you can be put to a full rebellion system, rebellion test, and not one of you fail the test. So, you know, you're effectively fused with your adjuster, even though you aren't literally. Right? So, you know, by the time you're a Gerasim citizen, okay, you know, you're effectively immortal. But prior to that, not so much, you know, especially if you're on the first mansion world, right? You know, you're still very mortal. There's lots of ascending mortals that discover that they're mortal there. They choose iniquity and cease to exist on the first mansion world. They're mortal. Yeah, humans haven't thought about heaven like that. Humans have always assumed that heaven is a place of magical innate immortality. Yeah, it's not. You're mortal still. You know, and that's why they can call you an ascending mortal, and it isn't just, you know, they don't have to always put one time ascending mortal on that or something. I mean, you know, I mean, initially you are literally still mortal.
Right? Oh, I was thinking the Caligasti 500.
Yeah.
Or 100.
100, yeah. 100. Yeah.
They were Gerasim citizens, were they not?
Right, right.
And
the problem was they got their adjusters pulled out.
60 out of those 100.
Yep.
Failed the test.
Right, failed the test. Right, they wouldn't have failed if they'd been on Gerasim and had their adjusters. They would have all passed the test. Nod would have been just fine if he hadn't volunteered to be a part of the corporeal staff. But because he didn't have the cosmic integrity without the catalyst of the adjuster, he couldn't do it on his own.
So, I hear you say this a lot, and I mm-hmm. kind of wonder to myself, you know, and I'm counting on, you know, infinite mercy and things like that.
Yeah.
Why would someone choose iniquity? Purposely, knowing that it was iniquity.
They don't choose iniquity. That's the key, see? I mean, you know, iniquity is way down the road. You're choosing something. Initially, you're choosing what you think is good, but it's actually bad.
But still, let's say you do that.
Right.
But you don't mean to do that.
Right. That's what I'm starting. I'm starting that story.
Doesn't God look at what you mean to do?
Right. 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 He bases it on your motives, not your intentions. He bases it on the core. Right. It all starts out. You're fine. It's just evil. You know, you're choosing what appears to be good to you, but it's right. Technically bad, so it's just evil. But at some point, it becomes insincere. At some point,
if it becomes that insincere, you mean?
At some point, you go, oh, wait a minute, I have enough objective consciousness now. I see that just appeared to be good. I can see that it's bad. I have a big enough picture view now. I can see that what I used to think was good is actually bad. But I'm too cowardly, too selfish, whatever. I'm going to continue to pick what I now know is technically bad because I think it serves my personal interest better. However, okay, now it's gone to sin.
Yeah, but however.
But again, you're not choosing iniquity.
Aren't the helpers and aren't the other people, you know, people who are, you know, angels are going to tell you that, hey, you know, you're
not your companions.
Right? And then you say, okay, gee, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I mean, don't you learn as you grow? But
you have free will. There's none
right,
so blind.
But if your intention is really still to do that eventually.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's you know, that it switches at a point. it becomes insincere, you know. And so initially, you know, your helpers are saying, no, that's not good. Just like they were before when it was just evil. They were telling you the same thing. And you're going, no, I'm unclear on this. And they can't tie you down and force you. I mean, you have free will. It's like, if that's what you want to do, okay, that's what you want to do. You know, and eventually you figure it out yourself. Oh, I see what they were saying. They were right. Well, you know, that isn't good, is it? That's bad. But I'm kind of liking where this is going. So I'm going to continue to do this anyway. And so initially,
that happens a lot. How many adjusters do we have?
If Lucifer, if primary Lindonendex can go down that path. Can an ascending mortal go down that path? Can a seraphim go down that path? I mean, of course we can.
Yeah.
Okay, and so it all starts out.
It seems so.
And remember.
To me, but maybe
and it gets worse. It gets worse. I mean, initially, you know, you're doing it selfishly and knowingly, but if you abide with sin long enough, your mind is not designed to be comfortable with badness.
But you have a different mind at that level, don't you?
No, yeah, you do. You have a higher mind. Just makes it all the more problematic. But your mind is designed to be comfortable with goodness. And so, you know, you're consciously choosing what you know to be bad. And so eventually, your mind flips it around. Eventually, you go cosmically insane, okay, where when you look at goodness, it looks like badness to you now. And you look at badness and it looks like goodness. So eventually it becomes a state where, you know, you're choosing this and, you know, it's bad, but it looks good to you. I mean, you're just completely insane and obviously completely beyond help, because if someone holds up something bad to you, it looks good to you. If something holds up something good to you, it looks bad to you. I mean, how are they going to help you now?
Right? I don't know, I just don't have a fear of that. I don't know why. I mean,
right, and you shouldn't.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that's what the whole, you know, the glory of that statement about those on Gerizim, who, you know, the ascending mortals, even that hadn't fused, didn't join the rebellion. You've got the integrity you need. You don't have to be afraid of this. I mean, you should be looking at Lucifer and thinking, really? Really?
Yeah.
Right? And as long as you are definitive like that, but eyes open. You know, you don't say that because you think this is trivial. No, you know, you're doing it with integrity, you know, and no fear. You'll be fine, right? But just, you know that pride goeth before a fall.
Oh, yeah.
Don't let spiritual pride slip into this. You know, if you start thinking, yeah, man, I've got it all worked out. Man, I can see goodness just clear as day. The moment you start getting prideful like that, okay, you've got an Achilles heel. So don't let pride slip in to your certitude, and then you'll be fine. we got to keep going here. All right, so that's the one, this definitive relationship. You know, so you watch the material sons and daughters and how they have to overcome the conflict between material males and material females. They have to develop the discipline to live together as a happy family. They've got to do that. It isn't automatic. You're there with them as a family, and you're learning how this works intimately with them. See why it's so important that it's a very intimate environment? It can't be just this vast, you know, impersonal crowd, because you've got to be able to get in there as if you are one of those material sex creatures and getting that super additive consequence. This has got to be really intimate, okay, relationship with them, so that you can sort of like be in them, be in the temple, see, with them where that super additive consequence is. See why they said that up front? Okay. All right. So you can do that. You can overcome the fact that you never had a chance, for whatever reason, to really discover that profound super additive consequence of bridging the gap. All right, let's keep going here. Now, what's the other one? What's the other biggie that you have to do directly?
No surviving mortal, midware, or seraphim may ascend to paradise, attain the Father, and be mustered into the core of the finality without having passed through that sublime experience of achieving parental relationship to an evolving child of the worlds, or some other experience analogous and equivalent thereto. The relationship of child and parents is fundamental to the essential concept of the universal Father and his universe children. Therefore, does such an experience become indispensable to the experiential training of all ascenders?
Okay, so the whole bit of parent-child, another indispensable element here. And notice the twist. Now it's not just the mortals. Now it's also the midwayers and the seraphim. Okay, midwayers and seraphim, you know, never have a material male-female differential. Okay, so, right, you know, but the parent-child thing, they need to get. And so, you know, even, you know, okay, with secondary midwayers, you know, that difference is kind of basically material male-female, even though they're not procreating. Primary midwayers, that's a little bit more like the positive-negative of cherubim and seraphim, you know, and then they mention seraphim here. So that whole spectrum, so even when you don't really have the material male-female differential, but you have the more positive-negative differential, you know, which, you know, you see a downstepped expression of on mortal worlds, you know, with homosexual couples, true couples, you know, where they're manifesting that positive negative differential like seraphim, you know, if it's a true genuine phenomenon. See, notice how that needs to be brought into relationship. That differential needs to be brought into relationship with raising children too. So see, that's an interesting little tidbit too for thinking about our immediate cultural sorts of questions. You know, it's one thing to have that parental experience in that differential. You know, it's a separate thing. There's the procreation thing, you know, which two males or two females can't do, or two seraphim or two midwayers can't do, right? That's a separate issue, you know. All right, but, okay, so you've got that, you know, and it's a quite definitive. Everyone that's going to ascend needs to have this parent-child experience in a direct way. Let's see, anything else there immediately? You know, again, you know, that it's a sublime experience. See, so you're looking for something. We're not just talking about changing diapers, you know. Okay, we're talking about something that's like that relationship thing, something that has literal spiritual nature to it, so that your spirit pattern, your personality can identify with it. Something sublime, see. Yeah.
Well, for me, in my experience, I've talked to a lot of people about this, raising children, having children, is the experience of learning how God loves me the way that I can unconditionally love my children and love them without measure, so to speak. You know, a lot of times when you're a kid, you think, oh, mom loves you more than loves me, type thing, which, you know, as a parent, mm-hmm. it's not, there's no differential.
Right.
You know, you may not always like what they do all the time, but that love experience that you get, right. that's unconditional,
right.
that is something that you don't get it unless you actually experience it.
Right.
And so you can, you know, something you can really relate to is the reason why you have to get the experience, because I'm sure, you know, God loves us that way and so in such a greater way, but there's not a measure, you know, no respecter of persons in a way. And that's kind of, to me, the
right.
I've always thought of that's probably the one of the main reasons why we need to experience that.
Right. The technical issue is the word love is only genuinely in play on the sixth level of meaning, the spiritual level. If all you have is fourth level of meaning, love, which you can call brotherly love, but, you know, that's technically not love. That's kindness. That's kin-likeness. You have to get it up two more levels to the genuine love, fatherly love. You know, as they mentioned, the universal father, relationship of the universal father to his universe children, right? that spiritual level where your spirit pattern can definitively, holistically engage this. It's not love with an adjective in front of it anymore. It's love. Okay? And it's certainly not down on the level of the flesh where you're calling physical sex relations love. Right? It's right. It's that fatherly love. It's transcendent of selflessness. It's godlikeness love. Okay? There's no way you're going to ascend in the universe if you haven't even gotten up to the sixth level of meaning. Right? And this is very foundational. To have this experience, something that catalyzes you definitively getting all the way up the first six levels of meaning so that the cosmos then opens to you. Until you get to the sixth level of meaning, you aren't able to access the cosmos, the triunity, the whole yet. Right? So how are you ever going to become a Gerasim citizen, a cosmic citizen, see? So that's why it's so indispensable.
And right? One other thing that I've noticed, having a lot of stepchildren, is trying to then, because you know how you love your own children, is then trying to love your stepchildren with that same unconditional love,
mm-hmm.
which I would imagine, which really is the next step, so to speak. Right. It's almost innate in a way, loving your own children, but it takes more of like, you have to make it happen, so to speak. You really have to be,
like you're doing here, with they're not your biologic children. They're the material sons and daughters, biologic children, right? And so, right, see, getting it definitively above what's going to happen more naturally biologically, that kin-likeness thing, that kindness, which is you're calling love. It's like, no, you need to go above that. And the less it's sort of there just because there's maternal instinct, from the first adjutant and that sort of stuff.
What's interesting is because you have the experience of that with your own kids, you know what it is. When you're trying to do that with your stepkids or other kids, and so you can see where you're where it's not or where it is. You can sort of measure it in a way you can really
See. So in many ways,
that's why it seems to me there's a whole reason to have to do this.
Right. See, and so that just brings in the fact that even if you've had biologic children, there may be some finishing touches on this indispensable experience that are most easily acquired. Relative to the material sons and daughters on Gerasim, where it isn't, the biologic element isn't there, and it's more genuinely, loving someone who's definitively other as if they were, yours, right? So it's more like the father, no respecter of persons. It's hard for us, because we serve two masters, it's hard for us to not be a respecter of persons to some degree. Our biologic children are just fundamentally different in our minds than other children, right?
No doubt.
Yep. See, so, all right, let's keep going here.
The ascending midway creatures and the evolutionary seraphim must pass through this parenthood experience in association with the material sons and daughters of the system headquarters. Thus do such non-reproducing ascenders obtain the experience of parenthood by assisting the Gerasim Adams and Eves in rearing and training their progeny.
You notice they just stressed that. We don't need to, I already unpacked that, Notice how they, and just in case you missed that point, they stressed it. Like I said, that's a very important element to appreciate that's there. All right.
All mortal survivors who have not experienced parenthood on the evolutionary worlds must also obtain this necessary training while sojourning in the homes of the Gerasim material sons and as parental associates of these superb fathers and mothers. This is true except insofar as such mortals have been able to compensate their deficiencies on the system nursery located on the first transitional culture world of Gerasim.
Okay, they'll clarify it in a minute here, but just, when they say who have not experienced parenthood on the evolutionary words, it sounds like, well, if I had one kid, I'm okay. No, I mean, it's requisite parenthood. There's, they have some way of measuring it. You have 3.58 units of parenthood, and you need 4, right? Okay, or whatever. You know, you'll see that they talk about that in a minute.
They have a lot of company.
You know, so, you know, and it's all dependent upon you and whatnot. It's all very individual. But each of us is going to be assessed. Did we get the requisite experience? Okay. Now, this is a little, let me just preface this. There's some stuff about the probationary nursery in this paragraph that isn't in any other places about the probationary nursery. Another example of how you need to keep everything in the book about a certain topic in mind in order to properly interpret. Okay.
The probation nursery of Satania is maintained by certain Marantia personalities on the Finaliter's world, one half of the planet being devoted to this work of child rearing. Here are received and reassembled certain children of surviving mortals, such as those offspring who perished on the evolutionary worlds before acquiring spiritual status as individuals. The ascension of either of its natural parents ensures that such a mortal child of the realms will be accorded repersonalization on the system Finaliter planet, and there be permitted to demonstrate by subsequent free will choice whether or not it elects to follow the parental path of mortal ascension. Children here appear as on the nativity world, except for the absence of sex differentiation. There is no reproduction of mortal kind after the life experience on the inhabited worlds.
Okay, so, and we'll talk a lot about the probationary nursery when we get to the Mansion World paper. So let's not unpack everything about the probationary nursery here, but just notice a couple of key elements. Here's where they point out that we're talking about the natural parents, the biologic parents, okay? Because remember, these children that are younger than roughly age 16 are still mindily connected to their biologic parents. Okay? So, you know, one of the biologic parents has to get resurrected because that child is still within the sphere of that mind of that those biologic parents in order for the child to be resurrected. Okay, so, you know, that's a key thing. You know, just the physics of it. It's like, well, how many children are in the probationary nursery? One half of the Finaliter's world. Okay? Finaliter's world is 10 times the diameter, 100 times the surface area. A surface area 50 times the surface area of the planet for the probationary nursery. Okay, a lot of children, right? Because, you know, here they start you out gentle. Here they tell you, even those who died before acquiring spiritual status as individuals, okay, in other words, roughly age 6, right? That's when you, seventh agent engages and you're encircled in the Holy Spirit, right? But notice the word is before. Not a little bit before, any time before, okay? And they take you to the next notch when you get to the probationary nursery section. And they say, even if it died before acquiring individual status. And I see here you have spiritual status as individuals. Well, if you go back a ways, there's a point at which you acquired individual status on the universe records. That's at birth, right? Even if they died before birth. I mean, they're saying that here too, but it isn't, you know, they aren't forcing you to immediately wrap your mind around that initially, right? They take you, they wait until the next time they bring it up before they make sure that you understand, right? You know, we're talking about the Father's salvaged children. Is there any difference between potentiality and actuality in the eyes of the Father?
No.
So is there any difference between a single-celled human and an eternal lighter? No. No, they are identical, right? So, any child that dies, is resurrected. Doesn't matter if they've been born yet or not. Yep.
I was just going to ask that about, say, a woman has an abortion. Okay. That's the same thing as a child that died prior to...
Yeah, miscarriage or whatever. As long as...
But how are they resurrected, though, in the form?
Right.
This is interesting.
Okay, so now you notice that they are... Here received the you know, again, we don't want to go into all these details. Oh, yeah. You know, we're going to run out of time. We're already over. Okay, but just let me just quickly. You know, I want you to see the basic details. We'll talk about this for probably an hour when we get to the probationary nursery section. Right? We can't answer all the questions here. Notice that they say reassembled. Okay, I mean they have literal material bodies in the probationary nursery, not mirage bodies. You know, they have material bodies. They're reassembled. The genetics is carried there by the cherubim, and they build bodies. But they're not sex-differentiated bodies, but they're material bodies. Okay?
If they were a single-cell fetus, they end up having a body, not just a...
Right, and so you can think, yeah, we'll talk about that, you know, when they talk about the families. I mean, you know, but anyway, they, and the other thing is, you know, repersonalization. Okay? You know, remember that, you know, they're talking, you know, they told you directly that they made, you know, we're talking about individuals that died before acquiring spiritual status as individuals. So before the encirclement of the Holy Spirit, before the identification of personality. Even if they died before that. It's like, well, how could they be saying repersonalization if they haven't gotten to the maturity level where the personality engages yet? Okay. They know exactly what things have to be precisely done, even though there isn't sex differentiation, so that the same personality that would have identified will identify. You know, they know all these details that physics that we don't know anything about, right? And you know, so that's all guaranteed that they're. That they appear as on the nativity world, so that same personality will identify. There's some very deep, mysterious relationship between an exact genetic nature and what personality ends up identifying. They don't understand that physics, but they just make sure that it's exactly like it came into being, so it'll happen naturally like it would have. Okay? All right, so...
Chris, what does it mean when it says to follow the parental path?
That's what I want. Like they get a choice.
Right. The choice about whether or not you're going to join the ascension career.
Or
if you choose to not join the ascension career, you know, you're mortal. You'll die probably at somewhere around age 20 or so. They don't design these
things.
That's
the parental path.
Yeah, the parental path is the ascension scheme. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That sentence confuses me.
Are you? Everyone chooses as an individual. See, until you're roughly age 16, you're not fully separated from your parents. I mean, they're dragging you along right now until you separate mindily. You know, you're literally using a different region of the mind energy system than your parents. Before that, you're glued to them, and they're just dragging you along until you're separated mindily. You can't make an independent choice. Okay, now I'm a separate self in the mind energy system. Do I want to strive towards paradise or not? And you can say no. And then you're not going to go to the first mansion world. You'll just die on the probationary nursery and that's the end of you.
So you're consciously choosing a liberty.
Everyone has to choose. You know, and same way with the people in the mansion worlds. I mean, you know, at some point you have to choose. There's no automatic to paradise. Everyone has to make an absolutely independent choice. Right? And so that's what we were talking about before. I mean, if I'm in the second mansion world and I say screw paradise, I mean, who needs that? Okay, I'm not going to be going to paradise. If I definitively choose to go to iniquity, okay. All right. So, like I said, we'll talk about that a lot when we get to the Mansion World paper. But remember, there's nothing automatic. Everyone has to choose this as an individual. All right. Let me just make sure there's nothing. Okay. Yeah. Let's keep going.
Mansion World students who have one or more children in the probationary nursery on the Phenalator's World and who are deficient in essential parental experience may apply for a Melchizedek permit, which will affect their temporary transfer from ascension duties on the Mansion Worlds to the Phenalator World, where they are granted opportunity to function as associate parents to their own and other children. This service of parental ministry may be later accredited on Gerasim as the fulfillment of one half of the training which such ascenders are required to undergo in the families of the material sons and daughters.
So, neat, some interesting little physics about that right there. At most one half of your accreditation. Why that difference? Because you're not rearing sex-differentiated children on the probationary nursery. See, so it again reminds you of how significant that differential is. Yeah. You at best can get, you can get half of what parenting is about if you parent your children as if there's no difference between boys and girls. You're only half a parent.
You get the other half from doing material stuff?
You've got to actually parent literal boys and material boys and girls, you know, on Gerasim, those material sons and daughters. I mean, half of getting what you need to get is dealing with that stark difference between boys and girls.
If you don't have girls, then you never get the other half, right?
Yeah. See, so you're going to be deficit. You notice when you see some of the things that are between the lines there, see?
You know, when I first read this, though, it was kind of like I said to myself, well, that's the kind of God I can believe in. I mean, like, it just seems so right. You know what I mean? It seems so...
But
the design of it is just so...
But just again, you know, you notice I was between the lines pointing you. Notice one of these false tangents that humans are going on these days. You know, we're trying to convince ourselves that boys and girls are identical, and we're going to try to raise boys and girls the same, you know, as if there's no difference between them. It's like, well, okay, you can do that, but you're going to wake up on the Mansion Worlds and discover that you don't define physics. and you at best got half of your parenting experience treating your children as if there's no difference between boys and girls, right? Just like you, if you didn't try to overcome the difference between the male and the female in that sex relationship. Right? So they're trying to get at this, you know, this isn't all just arbitrary, you know, humans, you know, have a culture that demands this difference and all these notions like this. You know, it's a definitive fact of reality.
Well, just to say, yeah. The question of abortion too then,
yeah.
Right.
Are they my children? No. They're God's children. Yeah. All right. I mean, the fact that we even think that they're our children in the first place.
Arrogance.
You know?
When we talk about, you know, women's rights and
That's why in the marriage and family papers, one of those bullet points they tell you is key is, you know, coming more into recognition that you're producing children for the Father. They're not your children. Right? They're the cosmos's children. You know, and like you were pointing out, it becomes easier when, you know, if you have foster children or adopted children or something like this, you know, where you start to get over that, you know, there's just children. You know, there isn't my children and your children in the eyes of God. There's just children. His children. They're all his children, not our children. Right? We're just a means for God's children to be created.
That's why we're sons.
Right? Can you humble yourself enough to put God first in the picture? Right? And then a number of these things, you know, will change the way you think about, you know, abortion, the death penalty, all these sorts of things. Yeah. All right. Let's finish it up here.
The probationary nursery itself is supervised by 1,000 couples of material sons and daughters volunteers from the Jerusalem colony of their order. They are immediately assisted by about an equal number of volunteer Midsonite parental groups who stop off here to render this service on their way from the Midsonite world of Satania to the unrevealed destiny on their special worlds of reservation among the finaliter spheres of Salvington.
Okay, so you've got three different groups. Now, remember in that the paragraph about the probationary nursery very directly, they said that they were maintained by certain Marantia personalities that they don't explain. And then you have the material sons and daughters, and you have the Midsoniters. So all three of these are making this whole system go. And, you know, you start to think, well, these thousand couples, is this part of their developmental process, maturing process, you know, that eventually gets them to be full citizenship status?
Doesn't seem like very many.
Right. Doesn't seem like very many, right? You know, because remember, a lot of the basic material issues are handled by the Spernaja. You know, the Spernaja are going to be changing diapers and whatnot. Okay. Just notice the complex system. You know, the fact you actually have Midsoniters involved and, you know, and Marantia beings, that's pretty different than what a child experiences on a nativity sphere. Yeah, no wonder their destiny is different. Remember, all these children in the probationary nursery become permanent citizens of paradise when they get to paradise. They don't go into the finality core.
Their son or spirit fused?
Well, they're gonna be father fused mortals, you know. But they don't go into the finality core. Their destiny is to be the permanent citizens. Okay. All right. Let's just wrap it up there. All right. Everyone, let's just take a moment to reflect.